This is Simply Lowai, and you're listening to The Expert with a Heart. Powered by Timber Media.
Hello and welcome back to Simply Lowai, everybody. Ahalya here keeping you company. And before I welcome today's guests, one of whom I think you already expect on the podcast, but someone who's returning as well to our series. You know, when you think about money and personal finance, I think one of the big dreams and goals is to have enough of it, right? To feel safe and protected. But what about actually protecting your assets and your money? We don't really tend to think too much about how we can keep it going and going and going a little bit more. So that's what we're going to be discussing today, because it's not, you know, money made is not just for us, right? It's something that you want to keep passing down for generations to come. But how do we do that? That's exactly what we're going to be talking about today with one, of course, the expected guest, Lowai Navlak. He's CEO and MD of International Money Matters Private Limited. And we've also got with us today Shantala Kumble, the Senior Vice President of International Money Matters Private Limited. Hi, Lowai. Thank you so much for being here, as always, our expert with a heart.
Thank you. I didn't have a choice.
Holding him hostage. And welcome, Shantala. Welcome back. Thank you so much for being here. All right. So let's dive right into it. Relevant conversation for me, as always. And a question that I want to open up with is, why are wills, which is basically how we tend to protect our money, right? How are wills and then family trusts applicable or relevant to young professionals today? Why is this something that you should be thinking about way, way, way before it is time, technically?
So will basically is a legal document which outlines how the assets should get passed on, how the liabilities will be met once one passes away, right? And anybody who has assets, whether young professionals or not, would need to have this, because then the family is not left, you know, navigating the uncertainty. So it really sets across a guideline for the survivor or the person who executes the will to say, this is how I want the assets to be distributed. So uncertainty can hit anybody anytime. So young professionals also need to be a little wary about the fact that their assets also should get distributed the way they want post their lifetime.
But here's where I get confused, right? Because don't you need to plan all of that out as in when you've got that body of assets that you know, okay, I need to protect? Because when you're young, you know, you're going to keep adding things, right, to your portfolio, to your list. So how old is young enough to start thinking about a will or a family trust?
No, but I think what you need to look at is that once I own asset, let's say I have a bank account. My name is on it. I am the owner of that account. And in case of my passing away at a young age, who will get access to that bank account?
Right.
So the way it works in India is that if you have a will, which is basically an expression of how I want the asset distributed after me, then you will follow the will. If not, there is personal law that comes in. And personal law depends on in India, on the religion that you belong to. And there's some formula around that. So one part is, of course, nominations that we insist on that you have in place so that at least the owner of the asset, so in this case, the bank, is free to transfer it to the nominee, but that nominee is not necessarily the legal owner of that asset. That will get distributed as per will or as per personal law. So even if you have one asset, I think you need a will.
So my next question is a direct takeoff from there. What happens in the unfortunate, you know, incident, someone passes away, but they don't have a will in place? I think we've all seen from the movies that it can get quite messy, but what happens in real life?
Yes, you're right, it does. So as Lowai was mentioning earlier, the personal law takes over. So wherever the person belongs to, you know, whichever religion. So there is Hindu Succession Act, there is for Christians and, you know, other Parsis, I think. There is this Indian Succession Act, then Islamic law. So the personal law takes over. And what could happen is, one is, if there is no will, it could become quite contentious. It could drag along. It could be an expensive affair. And because of all these reasons, it was also possible that it could get a little messy with the family members and who should get the distribution, what share should get. distributed, etc. So it's always better to have a will that outlines all of this. And also there will be friends, domestic help, or any particular cause that is very close to the heart of that person who passed away. Those will get nothing if there is no will. So it's always better to outline all these factors in the will.
Yeah, and also decide for yourself before the event, right? What is to happen with all of your assets? So can we at this point also make a distinction between a will and a family trust, like you said? And is it actually necessary to have both in place?
Okay, will is basically a document which says post my lifetime, this is how the assets have to get distributed. But in case of a trust, it's actually a structure which outlines for a very long time how the I'll have a control over it, and not necessarily after my lifetime. Even when I'm alive, okay, I can have a structure in place saying as long as I'm alive, the assets can get distributed like this. And post my lifetime, it can continue, it can change. Whatever I want, I can mention in that structure. So basically, we'll have an executor in place who will actually help pass on those assets to those mentioned there as beneficiaries. Whereas in structure, there are trustees. And the trustees can be individual trustees, it can be a corporate trustee, depending on what the person would want. And not necessarily both are required, though in certain cases there are instances where both could be required. So suppose I don't want to make a trust immediately and pass on assets, so I can always make a will and through a will formulate a trust. I can always say in a will that post my lifetime, all my assets will get into a trust. And in that case, how do I want to be the assets to be distributed or managed by the trust can also be outlined in the will.
It's also really funny because I'm just thinking how much of this conversation I've only heard about in movies and not here. Like, you hear the phrase trust fund baby and trust fund, and you get access to my trust only when I turn 18. But I also want to touch upon, because our series is so, you know, revolves so heavily around financial planning per se, is a trust fund and a smart or strategic financial planning tool for people to use, in your opinion?
So what happens is, you have to remember that trusts are documents through which I am going to in some way control how the assets are moving after my lifetime. The will is just straight, I transfer from A to B or A to B, C, D, and F. But in a trust situation, so let's look at situations where a trust would come in place, right? If there is let's say a significant amount of wealth and you want to protect it through lineage down the line, and you don't want a situation where external family members, so the spouse of, let's say, the son, the daughter, to have access, then you could create a trust and say, okay, this is where the assets will go and it cannot go outside that. So you can protect it that way. There are situations where people have special needs children. So they are taking care of them in their lifetime. They know after that, that child may not be, even if they are adult, may not have the ability to manage their money, and they'll need somebody else to help. So that happens. In some cases, we've even seen where people have children late, at a later age. Then they say, okay, I don't know whether I'll be there for all the milestones of my child, so I need to have a trust in place. So there are different situations in which that happens. Then, of course, if there is, let's say, a very large or contentious family, you'd say straight away whether it's going to happen or not, let me just protect, because who knows where the sort of lines cross each other and, you know, there is a problem in which the assets get transferred.
So you said that when you have one asset, it's worth considering a will and starting to work on it. But what about a family trust, right? At what point should one start considering it? And I think, again, the reason I said we hear about it in movies a lot is because it's also only the rich people in movies that always talk about having a trust. So at what point do family trust creations need to come into the picture and should we start considering?
So rich or not, I think, is very relative. I think the intent matters, like how you said, a special child. So irrespective of the quantum, they would want to have the trust structure because of the inability of the child to manage on its own, etc. So apart from that, when there are multiple assets, you know, different, a big family, a lot of legal heirs, there's a business family, and you want to very clearly demarcate what part of the business goes to whom, a trust comes into picture. And also when you want to avoid something called a probate, Normally, will has this thing of being there is a requirement, legal requirement of a probate coming into place where the will is either done or the properties are either there in cities like Kolkata, Mumbai or Chennai. Then a will comes, probate is a requirement. Okay. So to avoid that, a trust structure also helps. You know, because probate is a small exercise which normally drags more than 6 months or 8 months. So if there's a will made and if these are the places in which it is made, the executor of the will have to apply to a court. And the court will have to send a legal notice to all the legal heads saying, please come back if there is any contention on this will, etc. So there is a process. To avoid that process, trust is a better option.
Okay, perfect. So let's take that a step further. What are the advantages to setting up a family trust, you know, aside from the obvious, which is that it keeps your assets protected. It also keeps your, you know, the generations to come, their future secure in some sense or the other. Can it actually help maybe prevent disputes or even save on taxes in some way?
Yes, it does help on taxes, definitely. So trust is a separate entity. So there are so many expenses which a trust can claim, which an individual cannot. So that is a way in which it avoids or reduces the burden of tax. There are also instances where during the distribution, it can actually make sure that the distribution is done in such a way, of course, based on how it is outlined, the distribution is done such a way that there is a least tax impact or the timing can be managed accordingly if it is left to the trustees, etc. And also because it's a separate entity, there are a lot of tax exemptions which the trust gets. As in how an individual gets, similarly a trust can get as well.
Now let's talk about, you know, the question that I asked in the beginning is, as younger people, we think, okay, we haven't made all or achieved all of the goals that we want to protect as yet, right? So I think an important point comes in there, which is that I know for a fact wills can constantly be changed, right? They can be edited up until the last possible moment. I saw that happen with my grandfather, for example, before he passed away. And I always found the moment quite, you know, poignant, if I may say so, because you sit down and they're talking to you, right, about, okay, they've read out their wills through their own voice, and I'm just thinking, oh, this is such a strange moment. But the fact of the matter is, it is a very practical tool, right? It's a financial planning tool. So talk to me a little bit about how one should approach the editing of this, and can the same editing be done to a family trust as well? Can terms and conditions be changed once you've decided the first time around?
So the will, I think everyone must understand, is that it doesn't have to be a fancy legal document.
Okay.
It can be handwritten and kept. It's just that there needs to be a record that this is the last and final will.
Yes. Yeah.
So if you do keep editing your will, make sure you tear up the older one. Otherwise, there is a problem in figuring out which one is the latest, if the dates, etc., you know, are not mentioned. So you can keep doing that if you are in handwriting stage or, you know, writing stage.
Yeah.
And then subsequently, there's an option to register a will. So you can get the will registered, in which case, after you get a will registered and you want to amend it, there is a document known as a codicil, which is just an amendment saying this will is there the way it is, but this is the amendment to that will. And you can keep filing multiple codicils. Once there are too many more codicils and then the pages in the will, then maybe you rewrite the will. That might be a good idea. You
could,
yeah, just so that you don't have to cross-link everything there. So I think that's the important piece on the will. Before will, I think the other step everybody should take is to make sure nominations are in place. And make sure the nomination names, etc., are aligned to the legal documents that you have, whether it's Aadhaar or passport or whatever document, so that there is no dispute that it is a person to whom you have passed on or you intend to pass on those assets. Private trust, I think, probably it is a lot more complicated to change. I suppose, Chantla, yeah, all private trusts registered or... Normally,
trusts are registered. It's possible to change as far as the person who has formulated the trust is there. Even you can change the rules.
Understood.
Yeah. But there are two types of trust, basically. One is revocable, one is irrevocable. And it's an irrevocable trust when the person has passed away, there is no way you can change it.
Correct.
The trust is, unless it's authorized, somebody else who is surviving member or the trustee to change it, they will not be able to change it.
They will not be able to change it. Okay, that's an important distinction. So, you know, because again, IMMPL deals so much with cross-border financial planning, one important aspect of this is that people travel, they, you know, live in different parts of the world, experience different things in one lifetime. So when it comes to planning, you know, estate planning for individuals like that, especially NRIs, for example, what needs to be taken into consideration there when you're talking about assets in multiple countries, income in multiple currencies, right? How do you go about estate planning in that scenario?
So basically, when you have different assets in different countries, you will have to do wills in those countries.
Ah, okay.
Where the assets are. And there has to be a cross-reference in the other country where there is will done. So you can't do a will in India for assets which is there in another country. There has to be in that country. And also, it's important to make sure that all the jurisdictions, the laws there are considered. There is FEMA, there is, you know, global reporting, there is FATCA. So all that is taken into consideration while making this will separately there or a trust in any of these countries. And it is also important on the cross-referencing piece. Otherwise, you know, the loose ends will not be met.
Yeah, that makes sense.
No, primarily, I think you have to keep in mind that the person who's going to act on that will should understand the nuances, the legalities of that particular country. And therefore, it's better to do it in those countries because hopefully you'll have a lawyer from that place who will understand, you know, what are the terms and how should they be worded so that the person who is going to act on it, whether the investment manager, the banker, whoever it is, where the asset is owned, is able to do that smoothly.
Yeah, I think, you know, with things like wills, it's almost like you're planning to the best possible outcome, right? Because when you talk about something like death, it is very unpredictable. And you basically are planning until the most that you can possibly plan, but there has to be a little bit of percentage left. Yeah. So what are some of, in your experience, you know, helping your clients navigate, you know, creating a will, etc., what are the most common myths or mistakes that you've come across that Indian families sort of tend to make or to have these false perceptions, right, about inheritance and estate planning? I think generally, which I'll close the conversation with that question, but it tends to be a difficult conversation to have with people in the first place. So both of you can answer this one.
I think the first thing is that people think that I don't, as you mentioned, you know, let me have more assets and I'm building right now, so I will do the will later. I already have nominations, I don't need a will. These are probably the big myths, or why should I make it now because I'm going to amend or I'm about to get married or there's going to be a child, so after that I will do the will. I think all of that is probably myth because you think it's a very complicated document and it's a very complicated thing. So if you just simply say that, you know, I'm in my full senses and, you know, I'm making this as my last and final will as of so-and-so date and this is how I want intent of how I want the assets distributed. This chunk of real estate like this, financial assets like this, whatever else in the manner I want distributed, that's good enough to start with. Then you can get into documenting and listing everything and, you know, making sure that each asset is name numbered. So as an example, people having a fair amount of jewelry.
Right.
In cases, the best sort of best practice is to actually take photographs, put it in the will, put down the location, say this is meant for so and so person, this is the weight, this is purity, if you can even put all of that. So that there is, yes, so that there is no dispute.
Yeah.
I think the whole idea of the will is that this is things which I owned, this is how I want distributed, and I don't want any dispute on that. That's the whole simple purpose of it.
Yeah, I mean, and after the, you know, the death of a loved one, I think that's also, that's the last thing you want to be dealing with is the unpleasantness around that, right?
The other myth is, should I do a will at all? I mean, it's an assumption that, okay, it'll go to my spouse after me anyways.
Yes.
You know, that is not true. I mean, it again, as I said, personal law takes over. There is a particular way in which assets will get distributed if I die without a will. It's different for a female. It's different for a male. A female Hindu, it's a different set of class one has, class two has, it's all under the law. So it's important to know all that before, you know, even thinking it'll go to my spouse automatically or my kids automatically. And it's, people think, okay, it'll all get settled, it'll all go equally. That's not the way it works. In fact, there is a very good example where a huge business family had a lot of assets. Everything went, people agreed for the distribution, the person died without a will. The final thing came to a clock, an antique clock. And there was a court case because of the antique clock, because it's of emotion value. And that was not decided because obviously there was no will. And there was a long drawn case over it. So it's not just about the quantum of assets, it's also about what has emotional value and whom it should go, etc.
100%. I mean, hopefully this podcast convinces you that you do need a will. Hopefully we've done a good job there. But I'd like to close with this one question, which is, you know, for anyone who feels hesitant, because again, it is a very scary topic, I think, for people to broach. They don't want to think early on, at least, about the fact that, you know, one day it's all going to come to an end. So what, at that point, do you say to... say a potential client who might be in that space of, I don't even want to think about this right now, please.
Yeah, my thing is that you can't think now. You can imagine what the family members could be facing. Post that, you know, there'll be even more lack of clarity. I mean, it may be difficult for me now to decide whom it should go to, but you can imagine what the family members could face or the legal heirs could face. So thinking of that, I think it's better I act when I'm alive.
I think we've seen situations where it's turned to be, in some cases, very, very difficult for the surviving member to even survive, because assets are taking very long to pass on because of just, you know, there is no will in place. And so sometimes some of these real life incidents that we have come across, that seems to then convince people that, okay, fine, I can do it. And virtually, you know, it's something that while I'm sitting and talking with you, I can say, okay, why don't you write down what type of assets you have? Where do you want it distributed? And just on the top of that sheet, say, this is my, you know, last and final will, and I'm in full senses, and sign it. Basically get two witnesses. We are both available. We can sign it for you.
At this
meeting. Yeah, yeah. Because I think that's important that you get moving, because once it's there, let's say there's a change in asset, there's change in your family structure, etc. You will remember that, oh, that's there, I need to get it changed, and then move forward.
I think a very important distinction is the fact that it is not necessarily this fancy legal document. It is a documentation of your intent of what you wish to happen with your assets. I think it's been a very useful conversation. And as always, make sure that you are consulting a trusted financial advisor to help you, you know, get through it and work it out. And it can be edited. It's a step-by-step document. But estate planning in general, whether it's through a will and a trust fund or just a will, is extremely important to take into consideration. And like I said, I think we've done a good job of convincing you of that. Thank you, Lobai. Thank you, Shachla.
Thank you.
That was an episode of the Simply Lovi podcast series, Expert with a Heart. Powered by Timber Media.